Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are swapping the charts and graphs for trail cams and tracking maps. We're plunging headfirst into a really unique set of sources.
Yeah, this is a fun one.
It's a snapshot of the hunting community, all pulled from a blog post that's trying to capture, you know, the essence of a wild week in hunting.
And this is so much more than just trophy photos, which is, I think, what makes it such a fascinating deep dive.
Exactly.
Our mission here is to go beyond just the excitement of the hunt and really extract the full picture of modern hunting.
Right.
So that means looking at everything, viral tactical footage, expert advice, and then the surprisingly complex stuff.
Logistics.
The logistics, the legal infrastructure, all the resources that actually hold the entire sport together.
Absolutely. What our sources really show is that the modern hunting scene, it requires just as much strategic thinking off the land as on it. It's this dynamic interplay between, you know, skill, timing, legal compliance, and just sheer preparation. Mm. We're connecting the moment of the shot to the meticulous paperwork that makes that moment possible.
It really shows how the passion of the hunt has evolved into this highly organized endeavor.
Okay, let's unpack this and let's start exactly where the source material hooks us in. The sheer adrenaline.
Right to the good stuff.
The blog immediately features two very specific and highly contrasting hunting experiences that I think perfectly encapsulate the spectrum of the sport.
Yeah, the first one just grabs you with its difficulty. We're talking about a bow hunting video and the title is like, unbelievable spot and stalk.
For an antelope.
For an antelope. But the crucial detail, the part that really matters to the community, is the location, public land in Wyoming.
And that detail, public land, that's the hidden variable, isn't it? It makes this specific hunt so challenging and, frankly, so impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, spot and stalk hunting for speed goats, for antelope, is already one of the hardest types of hunts there is. They're exceptionally wary. Their eyesight is... it's legendary.
It's incredible. And the cover is often minimal out there.
Exactly.
So on private land, you might have, you know, less pressure, more predictability. But on public land, especially somewhere popular like Wyoming, the hunting pressure is high.
Which means the animals are already...
yeah.
They're educated.
They're educated. Exactly. It makes the skill requirement just... exponential. The hunter has to use these vast tracts of terrain. They're often glassing for hours from miles away, just trying to figure out an approach.
An approach that keeps them hidden from an animal that can spot movement a mile out.
Yeah. So that label, that unbelievable in the title, it feels well earned. It suggests a level of strategic precision and physical endurance that's just off the charts just to get within bow range.
So the antelope hunt sets the bar for that meticulous individual skill.
Mm-hmm.
But then the blog just pivots sharply.
Complete pivot.
It goes from the quiet, arid plains to the noisy, chaotic energy of opening day in the woods. It's spring turkey season.
And this is where that community excitement really peaks. The sources note the season kicking off strong. They highlight an outdoorsman, Colin Cottrell, on the opening morning of the 2021 wild turkey season.
And opening days? They're not just a hunt, are they? They're more of a cultural event loaded with anticipation.
Totally. Mm. And here's where it gets really interesting, because the source uses this massive, almost overwhelming success story to drive that anticipation.
I saw that. They generate enthusiasm by saying they hope that seeing, and I'm quoting here, 50 big turkeys go down in just 5 minutes gets you as excited as it does me.
I mean, 50 turkeys in 5 minutes. That is a staggering number.
It is.
Even if you assume it's, you know, a bit of hyperbole just to get people excited.
But is a volume like that even credible?
That's the question, right? If it is, it speaks volumes about the density of the turkey population in some areas, or maybe the scale of a huge coordinated group hunt.
So it's all about action.
It underscores that opening day is about action, volume, and, you know, achieving that immediate harvest success.
It sets a really high stakes, fast-paced expectation for the season. But the source also balances that frantic energy with a little bit of reflection. It mentions coming across a video while reminiscing over my last deer season.
And that is such a classic hunter behavior, especially during the spring.
Right.
You know, the deer season ends in the fall, and it leaves this period of reflection just as you're starting to prep your gear for the new spring hunt. It connects that annual cycle.
The high-energy pursuit of the spring turkey and then the nostalgia for the previous fall's more strategic deer hunt.
Exactly. It shows the hunter is always looking backward to learn and forward to plan.
And that continuous learning is key.
Yeah.
Which brings us perfectly to the next segment of the source material. It's a piece of tactical advice that, honestly, it challenges conventional wisdom.
Yes. And shifting from that general excitement to a specific, actionable piece of knowledge. That's the mark of a valuable resource. They're not just showing you success. They're trying to tell you how to achieve it.
And the specific quote is very pointed. It says, "Don't discount the fading light of evening as a prime occasion to catch a longbeard at his most vulnerable."
That is a fascinating piece of advice, especially for turkey hunting, which is so often defined by that morning rush.
Right, the gobble off the roost.
Exactly. Yeah. And a longbeard, for anyone who doesn't know, is an adult male turkey. A tom. You can tell by his long beard it signifies maturity. So the source is directly challenging that common tactic of trying to call toms off the roost right at dawn.
See, I always thought turkeys just settle down completely at dusk. They get quiet, they're highly cautious as they head up into the roosting tree. So isn't this advice kind of counterintuitive? Why would they be more vulnerable in the fading light?
And that is precisely why this tip is so valuable. It's also why it's sourced from a reputable place like the Meat Eater, which wrote the article on how to kill a tom in the evening.
Okay.
The vulnerability isn't necessarily that the turkey is less wary, but that his priority has shifted. It's become routine.
What do you mean?
Well, the need to find a suitable roost site and to settle in for the night, it often dictates their travel patterns.
Ah, so they're moving predictably. They're moving toward a specific area and maybe paying less attention to what's around them because they're just focused on getting to bed, basically.
That's it, exactly. They're committed to a destination. That makes their movement far more predictable than their, you know, erratic wandering during the midday lull.
So if you can intercept them on that path to the roost.
That final few hundred yards, that is your tactical advantage. It requires patience and knowing the land well enough to predict where they're going to settle for the night.
It really highlights how critical digital knowledge sharing has become. This specific strategy is being passed around so rapidly, not just through articles, but as the source notes, through video content.
Yeah.
It mentions a favorite YouTube series that has, and I quote, over 50 episodes available right now.
50 episodes.
That massive library of detailed, long-form content is how modern hunters are refining these little nuances.
It just reinforces that the pursuit of game is intertwined with this highly sophisticated information economy now.
Right.
You need the skill to stalk the antelope, but you also need the knowledge to leverage that evening transition for a tom.
Right.
And both are now delivered digitally.
And if we connect this knowledge acquisition to the bigger picture, all this intense field activity, it requires massive logistical preparation.
Oh, yeah.
We often forget that hunting is rarely just an individual pursuit anymore. It's an industry, and it's built on access and managed risk.
And that brings us to the segment that, I'll be honest, truly surprised me in this source. The focus on essential infrastructure.
The paperwork.
The paperwork behind the passion. Tucked right between the viral hunt videos and the cooking tips, the blog dedicates serious space to discussing specialized insurance coverage.
It's a complete shift in tone, isn't it? Moving from that high adrenaline footage to the legal and financial reality of land access.
It is.
What's fascinating to me here is how the source breaks down the specific insurance needs for different players in the community. It reflects the complexity and the liability inherent in using firearms on private or leased land.
And what stands out is that there isn't just one type of liability coverage. They list four distinct flavors, which really reveals the commercial layers involved here.
Okay, so let's look at the two categories the source emphasizes, starting with the professional side.
Right.
If you're a professional, say a guide or an outfitter, what specialized coverage do you need according to the source?
That's where guides and outfitters insurance comes in. This is liability coverage designed specifically for the person running a business. It protects them against claims if a client gets injured during a guided trip. Could be anything, a fall from a stand, a vehicle accident, or, you know, worse.
It confirms that guided hunting is a professional service that needs some robust risk management.
Absolutely.
And what about for groups who just secure access to property, like a club?
They need hunting lease or club insurance. This protects the collective group of hunters leasing the land from liability.
So it's for the group, not an individual.
It's for the group. It typically covers accidental damage to property or an injury to a member or a guest while they're using that leased property. It's essential for allowing groups to pool their resources and access larger tracts of land without facing, you know, catastrophic individual liability.
Okay, so now let's flip that to the landowner's side. the person who's actually providing the asset. What are their unique insurance needs as listed in the source?
They list two distinct coverages here. The first is vacant land insurance.
Vacant land.
This protects a property owner whose land is essentially an unused asset. It has no buildings, no commercial activity, besides maybe some recreational use like hunting. It manages the risk associated with inviting anyone onto a raw, undeveloped plot of land.
So it basically separates the liability of the hunting activity from the landowner's main home or their business coverage.
Precisely. And then the landowner also needs hunting lease insurance, which is often required by the leasing club itself, to make sure that if the club has an issue on the land, the owner is covered against claims from those activities.
Wow. So this dual insurance structure, it really confirms that land access is the bottleneck of modern hunting.
And liability is the price of entry.
It just transforms the whole picture of the solitary hunter into a participant in this heavily regulated, risk-assessed commercial ecosystem.
It's a really striking contrast to the idea of just, you know, wandering out into the woods.
It really is.
And that necessity for secure access is underscored even more by the other resources the source highlights. The blog lists things like Lisa Spotter, Hunter Resources, and Landowner Resources.
Right.
These aren't just articles. They are community conduits designed to facilitate the critical business of finding and managing access to land.
Lisa Spotter, for example. I mean, we're not talking about a classified ad in a local newspaper anymore, are we?
Not at all.
The existence of a dedicated, probably digital platform called Lisa Spotter suggests that finding a quality hunting spot is now a competitive, organized process that requires specialized tools.
It's a powerful symptom of land scarcity. As, you know, urbanization increases and private land becomes more valuable, accessing prime hunting territory requires negotiation, contracts, and specialized digital help. The entire community structure is built to support both sides of that land equation.
The person seeking the spot and the person providing it.
Exactly.
So, okay, we've covered the thrill, the tactics, and the contracts, yeah. All this preparation and management, it all leads to the final critical step, the harvest.
The whole point.
And the source smoothly transitions back to the practical post-hunt application of this entire effort, the cuisine.
It brings it full circle. You know, once you've secured the lease, taken the animal, completed the paperwork, your freezer is full, and the source explicitly addresses the search for a, quote, fresh new spin on what to do with all the venison in your freezer.
And the specific recommendation is venison meatball soup. Again, sourced from the meat eater. It's a surprisingly practical recommendation.
It is, and it's practical because it speaks directly to the reality of processing large game.
How so?
Well, when you harvest a deer or an elk, you generate a significant amount of trim. The less tender cuts, the scraps, the pieces that aren't really suitable for steaks or roasts.
Okay, so the leftover bits.
Right. And ground meat, which is what you need for meatballs, is the most efficient and versatile way to use that entire harvest. So the soup recipe, it kind of rounds out the modern hunter's identity. They're strategic in the field, meticulous with their logistics, and dedicated to using the entire harvest efficiently in the kitchen.
You know, if we look back at this whole deep dive, what stands out to me is the striking contrast between the two halves of the modern hunting community.
Mm-hmm.
You have the high adrenaline skill, the antelope stalk, that frantic turkey opening day, but that field success is utterly dependent on this other layer of complex, often commercial infrastructure.
Symbolized by specialized insurance and digital land resources.
Exactly. The sources show us a world where becoming an expert hunter means not only understanding animal behavior and ballistic range, but also knowing the difference between vacant land insurance and guides and outfitters insurance.
It's a compelling merger of field craft and financial literacy.
So the ultimate takeaways for you, our listener, are pretty clear. Embrace the unexpected tactical advantage of that fading light in the evening hunt. Understand that land access is now so complex, it requires dedicated digital platforms like Lease Spotter.
And know there's specialized legal coverage for pretty much every interaction between the hunter and the land.
Oh, and you have a new dinner idea, venison meatball soup.
It's just a powerful illustration of an activity that has become simultaneously deeply rooted in nature and highly reliant on modern administration.
And that dichotomy brings us to our final thought for you to chew on. While this source highlights the sheer excitement of the harvest, the incredible skill needed to take down that antelope or the buzz of seeing 50 big turkeys fall, it dedicates just as much space to the mundane, complicated reality of liability and land leases.
Mm-hmm.
So this raises an interesting question. In the world of hunting today, which presents the bigger, more critical challenge for the aspiring hunter, The mastery of the skill required to take down a big Tom in the fading light, or the secure and legal acquisition of the land necessary to pursue it responsibly. Something to consider as you contemplate the future of outdoor access.